This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 5 years ago, a book called The Pact told the story of three African-American young men from broken homes in Newark, New Jersey, who promised to support each other through college and medical school. They stayed true to their word, and today they call themselves the Three Doctors. Now they're out with a new book, The Bond, about what it was like to grow up without their fathers to help them. The book also includes accounts by or about their fathers, and it asks the questions of fatherless kids. Why did you leave me? Did you wonder if I missed you? Did you miss me? Why didn't you call more? Why didn't you send for me? Later in the program, a chance to meet Rob Crow and Zach Smith, the core members of the indie band Pinback, join us to play some music and take your calls. But first, if you have questions for the Three Doctors about growing up without a father, the effect that has on grown-ups, and about reconnection and forgiveness, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. The Three Doctors join us from our bureau in New York. Dr. George Jenkins is a dentist in Harlem and a professor at the Columbia University College of Dental Medicine. Dr. Jenkins, welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Samson Davis is an emergency room doctor at Newark's St. Michael's Medical Center, and thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And Dr. Ramik Hunt is an internist at University Medical Center in Princeton, New Jersey. Welcome to you, too.
Thank you.
And George Jenkins, if we could begin with you. Remind us, if you would, about the pact you guys made with each other when you were back in high school.
Well, we got together in high school and decided to join efforts to pursue our futures because all of us experienced one form of hardship or another, not having our dads there, not having very many mentors, not having very many resources. So it was tough for us to figure out our futures and dealing with a lot of the peer pressure and lack of pursuit of excellence as far as examples for us that was in front of us. So we just recognized similarities in each other and thought that we would probably have an easier go with trying to discover college and higher education and pursuing careers in health and science if we joined forces. And that was the best thing I think that could have happened to any of us because we pushed each other, drove each other to just do the best that we can possibly do. And it was sort of a positive peer pressure sort of group that we formed unknowingly that really pushed us. If I didn't do well and they did well, I wanted to do as well as they did, and they wanted to help me do as well as they did. So we just brought the best out of each other academically as well as personally.
Mm-hmm. Now, that explains the origins of the pact, and the book you guys wrote about it 5 years ago, was published 5 years ago. Ramik, if you would, tell us about the origin of this newest book, The Bond.
Well, The Bond came out of questions that we had. Overall, I had already reconnected with my dad, but I had some questions that I, as you mentioned in the opening piece, that I didn't know how to ask him. I didn't know how to ask if he really wanted me or these sorts of questions. And so what I thought about was actually writing this book and having the dialogue through this book. And I asked Sam and George if they wanted to be a part of it. And so they agreed, and that's kind of how it all started. And as it unfolded, you know, I realized that I started to actually heal a lot more than I even knew. Like, there was a void there that I didn't even really know about from my childhood after I started to research the book. And mm-hmm. I learned so much from my dad. I mean, he didn't, you know, and I applaud all of our dads because none of them tried to make any excuses for their mistakes. I mean, they actually, you know, laid their mistakes out and talked about them candidly in the book. And from that, I actually learned a lot about the man, my father. And I learned to respect him and realize a lot of the challenges and things that he had to go through. And I also wasn't making excuses for him. I mean, because there was a void there. I did have some inadequacies. I did have some self-esteem issues as I was growing up. Mm-hmm. But at least I had an understanding of what all this was about. And so that, to me, helped me heal. And we felt like if it helped us, it would help other people. And at the very least, it would start the dialogue around the nation about this issue of fatherlessness.
Mm. Let me just ask you, though, you started to write a story about your father and then invited the other two doctors in. Why, though, about your fathers, the men who were absent, or the adults who were absent, as opposed to writing about your mothers, who were the respondent grandmothers, who were the responsible adults who helped bring you up?
I think that's a very good question. And I think the reason it was important to talk about fathers is because they weren't there. And a lot of times we just, okay, your mom is there, your mom is taking care of you, that's great. And as long as she's a strong woman, everything is fine. And the truth is that that's not true. And we didn't realize that until we started to research this and realize how much we yearned for our dads. People think oftentimes that, you know, as long as you have a mom to raise your child, that's the only essential ingredient that you need to raise a child. And that's absolutely not true. Children need men and women. They need a maternal and a paternal figure. And if they don't have it, they will get it. I mean, a lot of our youth, they don't have a paternal figure, so they go out and find it on the streets, and they go join gangs and different things. And, you know, sometimes women find it in men, and they get in a lot of bad relationships. And so the children will find these relationships that they yearn for, but they will oftentimes find it in all the wrong places. And so it'll be better if we can nurture them. And that's kind of what we want to the message we want to give in the bond. And so we thought it was even more important and imperative because we see how we allow the dad to be absent, and that's absolutely not we shouldn't do that. And even whether it's your paternal, you know, your biological father or not, you know, you need a paternal figure in your life. And that's kind of what the overall message is in the bond.
Let me bring Samson Davis into the conversation. Of the three of you, well, your father was for much of your childhood there physically, but not there for you emotionally. Explain for us a little bit more about your relationship with your dad.
Right. Each one of us have a different story in the book, and each one of our relationships with our fathers were different, and that's what makes the book interesting in so many ways. And then our fathers contributed a chapter of what they were going through. Me personally, my father was there for the first 12 years of my life, but he was emotionally unavailable. He was an empty vessel in so many ways. He would come in after work and the rhetorical questions of, hey, son, how was your day? Mm-hmm. And is everything okay? And that was pretty much it. That was the extent of our relationship. And his marriage with my mother was stormy, to say the least. And it was a lot of arguing and chaos in the house. So when he finally left when I was 12 years old, I was excited. But not only did he divorce my mother, but he divorced the children as well. And he was still around, but peripherally in a way, and it was confusing for me for many years because I had an idea of what a dad was supposed to be like, and he was none of those things. And I used to watch televisions to try to get a lesson from Leave It to Beaver and The Cosby Show to understand how dad and moms interacted, because I didn't have that in my household. So years had passed, and moving forward in life, as Ramik alluded to, I turned to the streets to sort of learn how to model myself. And there were good men out there who helped me along the way, but I also ran into a lot of negative men who taught me how to do bad things. And as I moved forward in life, I had to deprogram myself, if you will, in a way to remove some of those qualities, the way that I saw women, the way that I carried myself in conversations, or the way I handled myself in school. I had to remove those sort of negative qualities and kind of instill positive qualities within myself. And then we had each other. Our friendship helped us become the men that we are today. Fast forward to today, presently, when we started to write this book, I was reluctant at first because I had closed the door in my mind of ever having a relationship with my father. But then I thought that this book would help so many people, not only myself. And I'm glad that I did, because my father recently passed in May. And I had an opportunity to spend the last 2 years visiting him in North Carolina, establishing a relationship with him. And, you know, it just was so much of me that was missing that I didn't realize. I was fragmented in so many ways. And spending those last few days helped me to become whole in so many ways. And I feel like we're not the only ones out there. A lot of people are displaced and disenfranchised with their fathers, and daughters and sons, they need to reconnect. And I waited for the days for my father to sort of reach out to me. And I realized that day wasn't going to come, and I had to be the bigger person and take the first step. And I'm glad that I did, because at the end of the day, it's important that I have that, so then I can carry it forward when we start to have children and marriage, and I can give my child everything that I felt like I didn't have in that relationship, that father-son, father-daughter relationship. relationship was essentially what makes us who we are as people.
We're talking with the three doctors, Samson Davis, George Jenkins, and Rameek Hunt. Their new book is The Bond, Three Young Men Learn to Forgive and Reconnect with Their Fathers. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's get Ray on the phone. Ray's with us from Detroit.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't have a question as much as I do a comment. I think forgiveness is an important quality. But I had a father that was physically, sexually, and emotionally abusive, and I always thought my life would have been better off without that kind of relationship.
You know, and I'd agree with you. It would be absolutely better off without that kind of relationship. You know, we understand that there are sometimes when you won't be able to reconnect with your biological father. But I think what we're really trying to say is that you do need a father figure, and a good father figure. And we also are not necessarily trying to celebrate our dads per se. We wrote this book with the intentions, because it was really a eureka moment for us to realize all of the things that happened to us when we were young people. We realized that a lot of it had to do with the fact that we didn't have a father figure. And so we just used our lives and our dads. We applaud them and hold them up mainly because they were men enough, you know, to actually put it out there and talk about their mistakes so that others can learn from it. And so you're right. I mean, that's not a healthy relationship to be in, but I do think that, obviously it would have been better for you to have that a better male relationship overall.
And fortunately, I had a decent stepdad, and I also agree with Neil's comment about, you know, motherhood. Let's celebrate what we do have and be grateful for that.
Yeah, by no stretch of the imaginations, we love our mothers. I mean, they are the ones.
And you'd better say so, right?
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, that goes. I mean, our mothers they sacrificed their lives to make us the men that we are today. But realizing that there's certain things that a son and a daughter has to be taught by a man. I mean, it's just essentially what it is. And if we take away that man from the house, then we're insufficient in so many ways.
Ray, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
sure.
it. We're talking with the authors of The Bond, Doctors Samson Davis, George Jenkins, and Rameek Hunt. In a moment, how they turned to each other when their fathers weren't around. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The authors of The Pact are back with a new promise and a new book titled The Bond, Three Young Men Learn to Forgive and Reconnect with Their Fathers. You can read a brief excerpt from the book at our website, npr.org/talk. Those three young men are Drs. George Jenkins, a dentist in Harlem and a professor at Columbia University College of Dental Medicine, Dr. Samson Davis, an emergency room doctor at Newark's St. Michael's Medical Center, and Dr. Rameek Hunt, an internist at University Medical Center in Princeton, New Jersey. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You could check out what other listeners have to say at our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. George, you have a great quote in this book about growing up without a father figure and learning to be a man. You write, "Although we didn't set out to do it this way, we ended up pooling our best traits and using them to complete ourselves. By accident, we performed the jobs our fathers had defaulted on. We helped one another become better men." I wonder, can you talk a little bit about what traits you helped each other with?
I mean, we just, all of us had some things that we were good at personally, and all of us had things that we weren't so good at. And, you know, just being around these guys, I got the opportunity to just take from some of their best qualities and kind of smooth over some of my qualities. I mean, Rameek was a much more than I was. He was a much more sort of analytical person. Instead of like, someone could tell me something, I would just believe it right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And Rameek wouldn't believe anything anyone says without substantiation. I mean, at all. So I kind of landed somewhere in the middle. Mm. But because I watched him, you know, and just dealt with different situations. Mm. And Sam, I learned plenty of things from Sam. Just like, for one thing that stands out is his work ethic. I remember seeing him, you know, I go to bed and wake up and see him still studying and couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? He would just study for so long. And then that kind of, I got a chance to kind of learn just to, how to increase my stamina with certain things. And we just taught each other lots and lots of things. I mean, Ramik taught me how to drive a manual transmission for my first car and just all these sort of things.
It's interesting you raise that, because some of the most powerful moments in the book are those little moments of intense embarrassment. I don't think anybody who was ever 11 or 12 or 13-year-old can forget, but the moment you describe when you had to leave the Pop Warner football team because nobody was there to tell you how to put on the shoulder pads, or another story of not knowing how to tie a tie and having nobody to go to teach you.
That happened. I mean, and those are the opportunities that we think makes or breaks your confidence level to push forward and start to think that you possibly have a place out in the world. I mean, if that tie story came in dental school, so if I would have been so embarrassed, or the type of person who would have been so embarrassed that I would have just said, you know, well, forget it. Maybe being a professional and being a dentist isn't for me because I'm just so behind the eight ball with these sort of things. That kind of trips people up when they feel they're inadequate in certain areas and all they need is a little bit of help. And once I got someone, one of my classmates showed me how to tie a tie, I tied the tie and got back to learning. But that emotional baggage can really weigh you down if you don't have someone to kind of talk it over with, and someone that you can go to that you trust that will give you those lessons so that you can decrease that level of embarrassment and just not be afraid to get that lesson.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Jason. Jason with us from Vancouver in Washington.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I was curious, and thank you for having on, by the way, having me on. I was curious if Drs. Jenkins, Hunt, and Davis had written this book for the audience as more of an altruistic purpose, or perhaps for themselves as a catharsis under the process of forgiving their fathers, and the book came as a result of that.
Go ahead. Who's this, Samson?
This is Dr. Hunt.
Dr. Hunt, go ahead, please.
Yeah, both. It was a dual purpose. Through the process of writing this book, we healed. I mean, the reason that I wanted to write it initially was to answer some questions, but I realized that it was much bigger than me, and we've realized that over time, that the things that we've done after, you know, throughout our lives and the way we've allowed ourselves to be put on display, if you will, it's bigger than us, and that's why we allow it to, that's why we keep doing it, and because we use our lives as examples, and we think that people can take a lot from our life and dissect it almost like a social study, and we've been given a platform to be able to do it, and so we feel like we have a social responsibility to do it. In the process, though, you're right, we healed from this, and that even makes it even more powerful, because we didn't know we were going to heal from it. And so we feel like, you know, other people will heal. They'll read the book and start the dialogue, and then they'll realize that they may, you know, once they start the dialogue, that they may actually even be able to heal.
Thanks very much. Go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, thank you very much. I look forward to reading the book, and good luck.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's turn now. This is Bill, and Bill's calling us from Rochester, New York.
Yes, I'd like to reiterate that we are only the dads. We're not the father, which is in heaven. But we're the biological dads they model from, and adopting the good and rejecting the bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to, and divorce is not a one-person thing. It takes two to get married and two to divorce.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it's a lifelong thing. And have a great time, and good luck on your book. Bye.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And let me just reiterate, that's the point that we're driving home here, that, you know, if the dads aren't in the house and they're not a part of the home situation, they have to be involved, because that child is yearning. I mean, kids go crazy. If you stop by the house and you're a dad once a year and you buy that kid an ice cream, that child remembers that ice cream cone for the rest of the year, what flavor, whether it was a sugar cone or had sprinkles on it. And the child reminds his mother. So I know mothers may feel a certain way because the mom is saying to herself, like, wow, I'll do everything for you. And dad could stop by once in a while and has such a huge impact. But that's just what it is. Dad has huge impacts. And we need to have the fathers there because that child is screaming for that dad's love.
Let's get another caller. This is Victoria. Victoria with us from Illinois.
Yes, I'm really excited about your book. Congratulations, doctors.
Thank you.
An 18-year-old son. He's presently freshman year at Hampton, and I'm thinking of purchasing the book, but I don't know how to introduce the book to him without making him feel...
Has his father been absent?
He's here, but he's he's not in a home, but he hasn't been actively involved through his life.
Mm-hmm.
So he does talk to his father occasionally, but it could be a lot better.
So you're afraid that by introducing the book it would seem to be judgmental?
Yeah, and I've never judged his father at all. I've never said anything bad. I've always explained to him what exactly is going on. But I thought maybe since you're about in the same age group, I think.
I think they're a little older.
Thank you.
And I don't know, but I thought that would be something good for him to read. But I don't want him to feel
bad. You know, thanks for your question. We've been fortunate enough to have a lot of young people gravitate towards us. And one of the things that we did for this book especially was start a blog about fatherhood. We call it the Fatherhood Roundtable. And not only a blog, we want to start local fatherhood roundtables. And so maybe you might even introduce them slowly by just having them go into the blog and look at some of the things that we're doing through our foundation and everything at 3doctors.com. And he can just click on the blog. And I think if he looks at those comments on the blogs, that will spark something in him, because mm-hmm. those comments are so interesting. And then he'll see that we have a book about this, and you know, then one day it'll just be laying on his door or his bed, you know. So then he'd read
it,
hopefully.
Do it that way. Well, sometimes if it comes from mom, it's like, mom, you know,
yeah.
Mom, what are you doing? What are you doing? So I have to think of clever ways sometimes to introduce things to him.
Yeah, you might even try the first book, which is not directly
yeah,
about this subject.
Say.
Yeah.
The first book?
The Pact.
The Pact?
Yep. P-A-C-T, Pact.
Oh, the Pact. Okay.
Okay.
I'll read that. Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the question.
Let's see if we can go now to, this is Joe Alice, is that right?
That's correct.
In Orinda, California. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I saw the documentary, The Pact, and you three acted as father figures for a young man who had a very ill sister and he had a lovely mother. I'm just wondering if you've kept in touch with him.
Oh, yes. You're speaking of Kenneth Bazemore. We have stayed in touch with him. He's been a mentee of ours for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
He just started his freshman year of high school. He's playing football, and he's excelling and doing well. And he's a young man that touched us in so many ways. At our first book signing for the Pack, he said that he ripped down his the poster of his favorite basketball player at the time and put a poster of the three of us on his wall. And we just melted. It was like, oh, my God. You know. And that's what we're doing. We take on social issues, and we want to put a face education. We want our kids to look to us as role models and realize the vital presence of education in their lives versus sports versus entertainment. I mean, these entities have their own lane, but we're trying to glamorize and glorify education the same way.
And that, you know, that brings up another point. Monica, his mother, actually, we write about her in the book. She actually tells a story about her and her dad in our book, The Bond, because we enlisted a lot of other people in this book. We didn't just have our stories or our father's memoirs. We also kind of broke some of the myths that, you know, young black men don't take care of their kids. And we have stories in there of a lot of friends of ours who actually break that myth, and Monica's story. And just this, I mean, there's so much in this book. I mean, it really makes me feel so good to put this product out. I mean, because it touches a chord in me every time I read the book. It really does.
I can't wait to read it. Thanks for all your good works.
Thank you. Okay. Let me ask you, none of you are any longer 18 years old anymore.
I thought we were.
But also, none of you are married. None of you have children of your own. And in the book, you write about part of the problem with that is that you never, because there was no father figure around the house, learned, how that worked.
Right. Yeah. For me, my this is Samson speaking, but I got my lessons on how to interact with women from my friends who were fatherless themselves. So we used to get in a little circle and try to teach each other. And the ones that were a year or 2 years older would tell us how they sort of catch a girl, kiss a girl, or what they did to get their numbers. Like, it just was a weird mechanism. And I never had that birds and bees conversation with my dad. I saw the cartoon for it, but I never had that interaction with my dad. So for a long time, I didn't know how to approach women, like how to view women outside of my mother, who I respected and loved, but she was the one who sort of got me in line. But then again, it was a part of me that felt like this should be Dad's job. Dad should tell me, I should see Dad doing this. And if it wasn't for The Cosby Show or Leave It to Beaver, I wouldn't have known. But as I got older, then I realized, like, okay, even with writing this book has brought me closer to, I feel like, one day getting married and having children, because this is a part of me now that has healed and allowed me to just be more leveled and have an open mind and an open heart when it comes to forming these relationships and these commitments.
I used to have problems with just chivalry. I didn't open car doors. I didn't, you know, we actually did a DVD about this round table, and that was something that I mentioned, that I didn't know those things. I didn't see those things in the home, and that affected me. That affected me a lot.
We're talking mm-hmm. with Drs. Samson Davis, George Jenkins, and Rameek Hunt, the authors of The Bond, Three Young Men Learn to Forgive and Reconnect with Their Fathers. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Trinavia. Do I have that correctly?
Trinavia,
go ahead, please.
Hi. I'd just like to make a comment on the situation at hand. The book couldn't have come out no better time. My husband just reunited with his father, and a month before that, so did I, you know. And it, like you said, you never know the gaps that are there until, you know, you are faced with what's been hurting you, you know. So, you know, it just was no better time. I just happened to be listening to the radio, and I heard it, and I just like, oh, my God, that is just incredible.
When you reconnected with your dad, Trinavia, what was it like? Did you learn a little bit more about what happened?
In a way, I did, but in a way, because I was 14 when I last saw him, but it was like he was riding by me in a car and didn't know who I was, but I didn't know who he were until he got further down. And now I'm 27, and I took him to meet my kids to meet him, and, you know, they were just playing, but, you know, it was just like questions in your head that you wanted to ask, either out of rage, curiosity, you know, it's just different feelings.
Mm-hmm. Rage mm-hmm. and curiosity, those are two pretty powerful emotions.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And, you know, the other thing is, you know, we didn't even talk about the health implications. I mean, there's a whole half of her DNA that he provided to her that can, you know, talk to. I mean, whenever I take a history on a patient, I always ask about their, you know, their family history and their mom and their dad. And she, you know, she wouldn't, you know, if she didn't reconnect, wouldn't even be able to find out if he, you know, was prone to heart attacks or hypercholesterolemia or just, you know, cancers or different things. And how about her heritage? I mean, that's half of her heritage that she would know nothing about if she didn't know about that side of the mm-hmm. family.
Mm-hmm. And that's correct, because, you know, when you go to the doctor and they ask you, it's like one side is super long and the other one is like, you know, blood yeah. pressure, you know.
Yeah, yeah. just rage on the other side. Yeah.
Right.
But I also want to commend you, too, because you made another important point that I don't want to let go unnoticed, the fact that your children was able to connect mm-hmm. with their grandfather. And that's very important. Like, I didn't have that opportunity to meet my grandfather because he had passed by the time I came along. And that's the one thing that was unique with all our stories, is that our fathers were fatherless themselves. So it was a cycle. We have to stop this vicious cycle of fatherlessness. And even if you're not genetically linked to that child, every child needs, again, to have that male figure as well as that female figure in their life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, Trinavia, good luck to you.
All right. Thank you. You are.
Good luck.
Good luck.
And I wanted to wind up. Obviously, your stories are all very solidly based in the fact that you are all African-American, yet the stories you tell are universal, too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is really what the bottom line is. I mean, this story is so universal. I have colleagues at my hospital who talk, you know, when I told them about the book, and they come up to me all the time and say, I'm going to pick this book up because although my dad was in the home, you know, he worked a lot and he provided for the family. He was a good dad, but he wasn't there for me emotionally. And actually, Sam talks about that a lot in his part of the chapter, too, because he had a similar experience. And so fatherlessness doesn't necessarily mean that the dad is not in the home. In fact, you know, it might even be worse if he's in the home and not providing emotional, you know, giving you anything emotionally. That's almost like dangling a carrot in front of you and you can't reach it. So it's absolutely important, and it is absolutely a universal topic.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today to talk to us about it. Appreciate it.
Thank you
very much.
We were speaking with Dr. Samson Davis, George Jenkins, and Rameek Hunt, authors of the New York Times bestseller The Pact, and now the authors of The Bond, Three Young Men Learn to Forgive and Reconnect with Their Fathers. Coming up, Zach Smith, Rob Crow, and the music of Pinback. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.